Hey, folks, I know there are lots of business owners who listen to this show. Maybe some of you never planned on running a business, but now here you are. One thing you've always got to keep in mind is how much you're spending on your operating costs. That's one of the first things we had to keep in mind with WTF. And with things costing more today than they did when we started, you want to keep your expenses down. To reduce costs and headaches, be smart and use NetSuite by Oracle, bringing accounting, financial management, inventory, and HR into one platform and one source of truth. Reduce IT costs, cut the costs of maintaining multiple systems, improve efficiency by bringing all your major business processes into one platform, slashing manual tasks and errors. By popular demand, NetSuite has extended its one-of-a-kind flexible financing program for a few more weeks. Head to netsuite.com/WTF for more. That's NetSuite, NetSuite.com/WTF.
Lock the gate!
All right, let's do this. How are you, what the fuckers, what the fuck buddies, what the fucksters, what's happening? It's Mark Maron. This is my podcast, WTF. Welcome to it. Is everybody just hanging out at home? Is that what's up? You just hanging out? I've been up and down in the last half hour, in the last hour, the every hour up and down. There's been some quieter moments, but man, I'm craving a general sense of connection with people. Look, I know I can Zoom, I can talk, I got Lynn over here at the house. I'm just saying in general, just the kind of passive nature of being alive in the world. Hey, what's up? Excuse me, could you step over there? Just give me a little room here on the train. Just the regular stuff. I miss having people come over. But today, Sam Morrell came. He came over. I've had a few comics. Comics have been bold about it. I offer them the option. If I talk to them personally, I say, look, you can come over. It's clean. We'll sit 6 feet apart. We don't need to touch. I just wanted to look at you and talk to you. So Sam came over. Very funny guy. He featured for me, I believe, back in the day. We're going to talk about that. So, how are you holding up, man? Like I said, it's up and down on a day-to-day basis. But I was doing the Instagram Live thing, and it's just even saying it bothers me. I think people enjoy it. I think it keeps me connected in some sort of immediate way, live, like a live show, a live audience. I like riffing, and it's okay, but I don't want to feel like I have to do it. At some point, like, everybody's doing a thing. Look, I'm doing a thing of me doing nothing or trying to figure out what to do with this time. What was weird was I was sitting on my back deck, and there was a guy, my neighbor's in his backyard, and I hear him on the cell phone. I don't know the guy. He's got an accent that I don't know where from. It's pretty heavy. I'm having a hard time understanding. But the conversation is heated. He's talking to somebody. There are amounts being dropped. There's like a 50,000, 200,000. Someone is mad at somebody. And then I keep trying to listen harder to figure out what's going on. And they're mad about those numbers. I don't know what those numbers indicate. I know nothing. But then he mentions the name Gary, that Gary somehow is involved in these numbers, and the negativity around the numbers was pretty strong. So I start to figure, just overhearing this guy, that, you know, Gary's in a little trouble. I mean, he's into about 50,000 to 200,000 somethings in trouble. I start to get concerned about Gary. And the way they're talking, I couldn't quite make it out, but I don't know who Gary is or where he is, but I think Gary's in trouble. So that's what happens on my back deck. I get half invested in a conversation that I can't even really make out other than numbers and the name Gary. And I decided someone's going down. Gary is going down. And it was just my sort of craving to be part of a community, you know, a live, living sort of like, hey, there's a guy over there. He's talking. I used to just talk to people here and there, but now just listen in. And now I got to spend the rest of the day wondering, like, 200,000 what? And how is Gary going to be all right? You know, I can only watch so much TV before I'm being just grateful to overhear a conversation, even though Gary might not be with us anymore. I mean, that's where I'm at. That's the level I'm operating at. And I'm jacked up on coffee. I mean, come on. Is that even necessary? Speaking of allergies, I'm pretty sure this nut allergy is real. And I'm starting to think that maybe I'm not as anxious and freaked out as I think I am. Maybe I'm just mildly allergic to nuts. Today, no nuts. No nuts day. And I don't want to brag, but I eat a lot of nuts. And I'd stayed off the cashews and the almonds because I had a food sensitivity, but I was just pounding walnuts. But then I started eating some peanut butter. And then I'm like, well, why not a little almond butter? Then I'm just eating handfuls of all the different kinds of nuts. And my throat itches, and I can't breathe at night, and having a hard time swallowing. But not coronavirus. I think I'm just pushing my luck with the nut allergy because today I'm like, ooh, that was a nice breath. I feel great. No nuts. What do I got to do to myself? Is that how bored I am, that I got to hurt myself to feel like I'm alive? I mean, come on. That is no way to live. I can't breathe. I must be frightened. Or I shouldn't eat a fucking mound of almonds and a mound of cashews and some peanut butter for a lot of reasons, mainly because I can't breathe right when I do it. Exciting times. Pow, I just shit my pants. Just coffee.coop. Also, if you're in the LA area, I want to do this because these guys are always good to me, but Matt over there, Cafe de Leche, they got a couple locations, one in Altadena and one in Highland Park. I was there when he opened the place. He's roasting his own coffee over there. You can go to cafedeleche.net. Good coffee. He's doing a good job. Matt is on the machine himself. He's manning the machine. But I'm trying to help him out. I'm trying to help the small businesses in my life out. Got some records in the mail from Dan over at Gimme Gimme. Raquel Jack just sold me a painting. Very crass, dirty little painting that I'm keeping her in business. Just trying to help out, man. Help out where I can. But everybody's okay over here. Lynn's okay. But have you found it, you know, what have you been doing? I don't know how alone you are, or like, I'm here with somebody, obviously. I'm here. Lynn's over there in the house. But like, with all this quiet and the air quality is so good and the kind of space that we have around noise, around pollution, around, you know, feeling pressure. You know, it's great about not doing things or having nothing to do because of this is that no one really has anything to do. And maybe I've said this before, but there's no competition going on. Really. Well, it's a little bit like, you know, with Instagram lives, but whatever. But what I'm saying is there's a peace to all this, as horrifying as it is and as chaotic as it all is, because we're in a spiraling fucking tailspin as a country with a guy in the cockpit that wants nothing more to get out and save himself. But given all that, with the peace of mind, do you find yourself reflecting about your life? About, you know, sort of like, did you get everything you needed to get done? Are you okay? Are you just living? Are there things going on in your mind where you're like, when and if we get out of this, I'm going to do this now? Are you thinking along those lines? I kind of am. Unfortunately, every time I go down that route, when and if we get out of this, I'm out. I'm done. It's over, man. I'm having a hard time figuring out what matters now. You know, does it matter that I talked to Sam Morrell today? Does that matter to you? I mean, I think it does matter. I think on some level it matters more than ever. Because who's talking to anybody? I just wish more people would just come over. Just mask up. Just mask up and come on over. Let's do this. We got to keep these conversations alive. I mean, this is what I do. I talk to people about life. I'm not going to start doing a news show. I'm not going to interview virologists. This is what I do. How are we getting by? So what do I do? What matters? Well, I focus on my life and I try to focus on, you know, how I can help a little bit, do what I can. But I'll tell you what I did do. I said a few things on, maybe it was Monday. I got some email. I got two emails I want to share. This one says, thank you from a vet. Hi, Mark. As a veterinarian, I want to say thank you so much for your shout out to the veterinary community during this COVID-19 crisis. We in the veterinary community are faced with unique challenges during this time. We normally use masks and gloves and gowns every day, and we are all trying to balance continuing to care for pets and by extension the people who love them with conserving these now valuable resources so our colleagues in the human health field can have what they need. I know many veterinary organizations have been donating PPE and even ventilators to human hospitals. We believe in One Health, which recognizes the interconnection between people, animals, plants, and their shared environment. I was touched to hear your appreciation for your veterinarian and staff. When I'm nervous about going into work and being around other people, it helps me to remember that, like you said, sometimes a pet is the only thing a person has that is keeping them sane. And it is such a privilege to be able to care for that pet and help make someone's life a little bit better during these trying times. Love the show. All my best to Monkey and your other sweet kitties, Kim in Nashville. Thank you, Kim. Fucking love the animals, man. They remind us. Peace. Peace. Here's another one. Thanks from a vet. Same subject line. Dear Mark, I'm a veterinarian in Chicago, and I always listen to your cat stories with a lot of interest. I'm still working 40 hours a week during this pandemic, and there have been many days when I have struggled to see myself as an essential worker. When humans are dying by the thousands, hospitals are overrun with critical patients, and families are separated from their loved ones for fear of becoming infected themselves, it is hard to justify going to work to trim a cat's nails or give a rabies vaccine to a dog. I worry every day that one of my staff members or clients is going to contract this horrible disease on the way to my clinic. I have racked my brain trying to figure out what my place is in this crisis, wanting so badly to be useful. Hearing your story about Monkey today reminded me that pets are paramount to many people's happiness. And being stuck at home with a sick pet is heartbreaking. I'm glad your vet was able to help you and Monkey, and I hope that I'm doing the same for the people and pets of my city. Your words of admiration for your vet and the staff have made me feel like I do have a part to play during this crazy time. Thank you. Continuing to do your job, my morning commute would be a lot less enjoyable if I didn't have WTF. Sincerely, Kara. Man, that got me all. So, I guess a lot of us are trying to figure out, you know, are we being useful? You know, does it matter? Because I think some part of, you know, I think a lot of us are still in denial about the extent of this thing and how long it's going to last. I mean, has it affected our lives? You know, are we checking in with our local hospitals and stuff like that? But like, I think there's a little denial going on. Then there's this idea that the way to do it is just to pretend like we're just, you know, living our life, which we are, but it's scary and it can be lonely and it can be, you know, frustrating and aggravating. It just feels to me like nothing's ever going to be the same. And it makes me wonder, I mean, culturally, like even think about it right now. Like most people, there's no, what is the cultural through line right now? It's just, we're all sort of like, what's going on? When is this going to be normal? Am I sick? Am I not sick? Is anyone I know sick? What if I get sick? You know, what's the information? Is there something being done on a large scale to help us through this? It's all news. And it's odd what's happening in terms of entertainment. If people are doing it, there's no cultural momentum to anything. People are their own curators. They're their own networks. They're just picking their own little bits of information from and entertainment from the millions of possibilities. It's a fucking new world out there. It's very interesting. There's a relief from, you know, the kind of inundation of advertising and publicity and promotion that we usually get just with the nature of how TV was was before this happened. Now everything's a lot more human. It's a lot more raw. It's a lot more lo-fi. I mean, I'm not saying I don't miss production values, but what I don't miss is the constant hammering of publicity bell, you know, in your brains and trying with everything it has, the corporate momentum to sort of guide culture towards the same thing, the same options, seems to have quieted down. That din seems to have quieted down a bit. And because of that, people are just sort of like, I don't know, man. I'm just trying to get by. I'm just making choices on the fly. Here's the other thing I'm trying not to do during this time is like get not nostalgic, but melancholic about decisions I've made in my life. I've got something in my heart and in my mind that just wants me to feel like I've done something wrong. I have fucked up. I am not good enough. And when I get enough time to think, I can bury myself in a fucking pile of self-generated psychic shit. I'll tell you, man. Sam Morrell is here. His Comedy Central stand-up special, I Got This, is available for free on standup.com/Sam Morrell, or you can get it as an album wherever you get albums. I like this guy. I really didn't know this guy, but we did have some conversations when I worked with him years ago when he was sort of like a kid, and he's very funny, and he's a good guy, and he actually has been staying. His girlfriend is Taylor Tomlinson, who was on the show on Monday. But I just don't know people, and I like when I can talk to comics because we know how to be open with each other. And he's had an interesting life, and I like this guy, Sam Morrell, and I will talk now.
I got an Xbox delivered, and we've been playing Halo, and she loves it, and it's been big.
Really?
Yeah.
And she had never played it before?
No, we went to an arcade in Sherman Oaks once, and we played Halo, and she loved it. So I was like, this will kill hours.
Yeah.
This will be big.
And has it been?
Yeah, it's huge.
What is the basis of that game? How does it work?
Halo, you just shoot aliens.
Oh, that's it?
It's pretty fun. I'm not even into those games, but it's like a bonding activity. It's healed fights.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, yeah, for sure.
Well, this is like, that's sort of crazy, man, that first of all, that you're stuck here and you're a New York guy.
It's rough.
I can't even imagine it. And you got, like, it's already isolating when you're not from here to begin with.
Yeah.
And not, none of us can do fucking stand-up.
I know.
And we're like, well, who are we? It's like, you're lucky. I've got my girlfriend here, too. But, if, like, can you imagine if you were stuck out here by yourself?
Yeah. I feel like I don't exist in a way. Don't you feel insignificant right now? Because stand-up is so much of our purpose that I feel like doing a road gig without the stand-up.
Yeah, which is horrible. Just wandering around like an alien landscape. Like, but now you can't even go walk around a fucking mall. It's not even like a road gig.
I miss malls.
Right.
I never thought I would miss a mall, but I'm like, holy shit, I could use like a Cinnabon or something right now.
I realize like when you're coming over here, like I haven't talked, like Taylor did one of these. In the quarantine, one other guy did one. I sprayed down the thing.
I got
alcohol and I got all kinds of shit here. Hand sanitizers.
Yeah, we've been taking it seriously.
Yeah, you got to. I mean, it's scary, man.
I hate people that aren't. I feel for New Yorkers the most right now because they have to stay in longer because of the rest of the country because they're getting hit first. So I just like talking to my folks. David Tell's called me a couple times.
Has he?
Yeah.
Is he all right?
Yeah, he's all right. I think he's another one where he just misses stand-up a ton.
Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, for sure. But I mean, like, do you know anybody who's sick?
I knew a comedian, Noah Savage, who was sick, and I knew that Michael Yo was sick.
Did they get through it?
They're both, I think, okay now.
Yeah?
And Jimmy from Gotham. I don't know if you ever work at Gotham, but he's a great guy.
Yeah.
He was a big guy, the nicest, and yeah, he was in the hospital for like 17 days, COVID pneumonia, and he was connected to a ventilator. The guy next to him died. He basically, like, can you imagine being in a hospital alone and the guy in your room dies? And he just wrote this long Facebook post thinking he was next. Yeah.
Is he all right now?
He's okay.
He made it through?
Yeah. This is real.
No, I know.
This is crazy.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying it to me, not to you.
Right.
Like, I'm like, I can't believe how real this is.
I know, because there's that part of your brain where you're sort of like, well, you know, it's like, you know, it's, you know, it's not like a flu, but for some reason, there's part of your brain that's sort of like, I'm not going to get it.
Yeah.
You know, like, why would I get it?
Yeah, it's like Janis Joplin. I'm a survivor.
Right.
It's not going to happen to me.
Right. And then look what happened. But so that guy who, from Jimmy, he had no other underlying health issues or anything?
No.
Oh, shit.
See, Michael Yeo. You know Michael Yeo. He's a healthy guy.
Yeah.
He's a college football player.
But he's all right.
He's all right. Think? Yeah.
Like, yeah, it's scaring the fuck out of me. Like, you know, I got these masks we just ordered.
Yeah.
Now I'm like, do we need to rethink this? You think
did you hear what they said? Now they're saying, like, they said for a while the masks don't do anything, and now they're like, no, they do help. And it's like, did they just say that so we'd stop buying them so that hospitals could get them?
Well, no, I'm not even getting those kind. You know, I got, you know, it's really a matter of, like, can you put anything over your face?
Right.
Obviously, a hospital-grade mask would be one thing,
yeah.
But like you can't even get those. So it really comes down to like if I wrap a bandana, whatever it is, does anything help?
But then you're touching your face more to adjust it and stuff. I do at least, so I don't know.
I know. Well, there's companies making these. We just got someone just sent me some company that usually makes like kitchen fabric aprons and stuff. So they're making a mask that you can insert a piece of. They recommended and sent with a vacuum bag, like a HEPA filter vacuum bag. You cut out a piece that you can slide into the thing. So you got like, it's like a designer mask almost.
Wow.
Yeah. So that's the story on that. But you guys are going out to shop a little bit or what?
We went to the grocery store twice. And
right.
When we can deliver it, we do it. But it's like, dude, it feels like robbing a bank because we're in the car together and we're like,
we got masks on,
we got gloves on. We're like, be quick, hurry up, get in there. It feels so.
Yeah, we get in, get out. I'll leave it running. Yeah, when I see you come out, I'll start rolling. You throw the shit in the back. Oh, it's crazy, man.
It's intense. And then sometimes people in the stores don't respect your space. You're like, come on, guys. Like, we got to look out for each other. And she's vegan, so anything I cook is amazing to her. Like, she just does it. She has the lowest bar for taste.
Oh, really?
So she thinks I'm a good cook. I'm not.
You're not?
I'm okay.
But you're not vegan, are you?
No.
Yeah.
But
so you're honoring that, though? What is she eating? What is she eating for protein during this time?
We've had a lot of pasta. No,
yeah,
I don't
yeah.
know what the pro. I don't know if we've been eating protein
at all.
I think we're just carving it up. We're having beans. There's a lot of beans in there. It's pretty weird.
Are you writing?
We've been doing our own thing. Like I miss stand up so much. I started just like FaceTiming my mom and be like, "Can I just do jokes for you?" And then I started recording and just putting it online because my mom's pretty. She's pretty cool and she's pretty fair. Like if a bit's bad, she'll stone face me. And that's pretty cool.
Are you bouncing stuff off your mother?
Well, I miss an audience so much. I just like I miss stand up. It's like
it's nice that you get along with your mother that well.
Yeah, my mom's cool. And then Taylor and I have been making videos, and I miss just pure stand up though because I was, you know, I just released something and I was kind of touring with my new stuff and I was excited honing that. I was excited to have a new hour sooner rather than whenever this will be.
So you and Taylor are doing like an Instagram thing or what is it? YouTube? Like I don't want to sound like an old man, but I know
I mean,
you were...
You nailed it. That was it.
This one or the other, right?
Yeah. Well, it's mostly Instagram, but we put a couple on YouTube. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's like just you two like dealing with the quarantine situation?
Yeah, because when I was there the first day, she just said, how are we going to stay creative? Because I think we just realized, we just lost like, you know, a couple months of work in a day. So she said, what are we going to do, you know, money aside, what are we going to do to stay creative?
Right.
And just not lose, you know.
Yeah, the vitality, the edge.
Yeah, and she said, we should do a web series about us being a new couple and now forced to live together. And I was like, cool, let's do it right now. And we just started doing it. And
oh, yeah, that's great.
It was fun.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And how often are you doing it?
We've done like 16 of them. Or
really?
Something. Yeah.
And where are they? They're on Instagram?
Yeah.
Under who's the...
We both post them. It turned into a reality show because our agent sent us a thing where they were like, there's reality companies interested. And we're like, what do you mean? They're like, for you guys to do an actual reality show. And we're like, we're not fucking doing that. That sounds awful. Like, you'd send a camera crew? We both were like, no, so quickly. And it just turned into a whole thing. So then we just turned our web series into a fake reality show.
Right.
And we got a really good editor. So it looks like a Real Housewives type show now.
But you guys had a good time making that thing?
Yeah, it's fun. And I'm still trying to do... I miss stand-up the most. Like, and so does she. It's crazy. It's
well,
crazy.
It's like, yeah, after a certain point, you know, I don't know. I've been doing it like I have more than half my life now. So like,
wow.
You know, but to really think like, you know, how long have you really taken off ever?
After a week, it's the most ever.
Right.
I mean, so
exactly.
So now it's been almost a month. So
especially when you're in New York, because you just go do it.
That's
so
all there is
yeah,
to do.
Right.
Like, It's crazy. Yeah, once the NBA season canceled, I was like, oh my God, this is insane. I've never seen anything like this.
Now what are we gonna do?
And then the Comedy Cellar closed, and I was like, holy shit, they never closed.
Right.
I remember, I think it was Hurricane Irene.
Right.
I remember they had like 60 people in there, a generator powering it.
Right.
Nowhere around there was open except the cellar. And I remember just watching like Tom Papa just like working a room to like 40 people or something. It was crazy.
They were one of the first places to open after 9/11, man. I mean, I remember doing comedy, like we didn't know when we could, and it was definitely too weird and too raw. I can't remember how many weeks it was before they opened, but it wasn't that long. Because you could still smell that smell down there, and people were kind of like, you know, PTSD everywhere. Just people in New York were just like, what the fuck is happening? And, you know, we're doing shows, and it was volatile. Because, you know, you had to speak to the reality of it. And that's where that whole tough crowd table thing started.
Yeah.
Was around 9/11.
That's amazing.
Was like all of a sudden you started to see who people really were. Everyone's true feelings around New York and around politics and around racism, it all came out. And that was where it had the source of it.
How is a racism in New York, though? It's such a melting pot. Like,
well, no, it was just about like who were the people that were, you know, were immediately sort of like, we should get rid of all of them.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, yeah, why, you know, just complete profiling. There was definitely a school of thought there.
Yeah.
But no, I think you're right.
But you hear it now. Like, you see it online with like just like, shit about Chinese people right
now. It's ridiculous.
Yeah.
But those people, the people that do that are fucking morons.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
But also there's people doing it just around New Yorkers.
Yeah.
Like people like
the. Oh, yeah. It went from the Chinese virus to the New York virus. What's his name in Florida? DeSantis?
Yeah.
He called it, I think he referred to it as a New York virus, which I'm like, fuck you, dude. Florida sucks. Don't fucking shit on New York.
Not only does Florida suck, but it's all New Yorkers.
I know.
What is he, a fucking moron? That's where everyone from New York ends up in Florida. Oh. And this idiot's got, that guy's got a real fucking, he's a fucking moron, that guy.
He is.
Unbelievable. So where'd you grow up, though?
I grew up originally in Chelsea and then uptown in Manhattan.
Oh, really? So you're a real, like, New York kid?
Yeah.
How the hell did that happen? What were you, like, what did your parents do?
My mom's an artist, and my dad, I have, like, a complicated family thing a little bit. My dad is my dad, who's technically my stepdad, but has been around since I was, like, 3.
Yeah.
So I call him dad, and he's been my dad forever. He's a lawyer.
He is? So, it's complicated, like.
Well, I had a.
Is his name Morrell?
Yeah, I took his name. I was originally Greenberg, Sam Greenberg.
Really?
That's my mom's name. So until a 3.
That was your original dad? The biological father's name was Greenberg?
His last name is Elgort.
Elgort.
Yeah.
Are these all Jews?
Yeah. All Jews.
So you have a complicated, fucked up Jewish.
Yeah. Thing. You don't hear about Jewish dads walking out as much. It's a much rarer.
It happens, though.
It happens. I'm living proof.
Yeah, and you know, it's weird. There's because I'm a Jew too, and there's this weird.
Oh, I know. Do you remember our conversation about this?
Well, I kind of do because I remember working with you.
Yeah.
Up in Menlo Park, or where was it? In Sunnyvale.
Yeah.
Right. We were. Like, I don't know if I remember the conversation. I don't know where my head was at or how long ago that was.
Close to a decade.
Is it 10 years ago?
About, yeah.
I just remember, like, you were young and, you know, you had a good, you know, you were excited. You know, you were writing tight jokes. You were a great joke writer.
I was excited
writer.
To be working with you.
Oh, that's
I, well,
nice.
I was, you know, featuring for the most part back then. And, you know, you don't really get to choose who you work with.
Right,
so
right.
I get lucky and get a comic like you every once in a while. But
right.
There's a lot of people who were kind of phoning it in. So when I work with someone like you, I was like, oh, this is like a big deal. I basically broke even on that weekend.
Oh, good.
I wanted to just work with you.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah.
I think I remember we had a good time. I'm not sure I remember the specific conversation about Jews.
Well, here's what happened. You said, at one point, you were really nice all weekend. And I remember we got Vietnamese sandwiches every day. And
oh, banh mi sandwiches,
first time I saw you, I will never forget this, because you were wearing a fedora, sunglasses, and smoking a cigar by the pool.
Oh, yeah.
And it felt like iconic to me. I was like, holy shit, this is like old Hollywood right here. This is kind of badass. And I went up to you and you were really friendly. And and at one point you turned to me and you said, you're a hide the Jew. And I was like, what does that mean? And you said, you don't talk about being Jewish enough on stage. And I said, oh, wow, maybe you're right. Thinking about it, and then I didn't see you for years. I saw you, I think, like maybe 3 or 4 years later in Montreal.
Right.
And you said, where did we work together? And I said, Sunnyvale. And you said, how was that? And I said, you called me a hide the Jew on stage, and tonight I opened with a Jew joke. And you said, I got to you.
That's so wild, you know, because I was a hide the juju.
Well, maybe that's what you were trying to help or something. Maybe you saw a little bit of me in you.
Well, yeah, but I mean,
or you and me. I mean,
well, it's just weird because, like, even now, like on the new special, like it's a weird time for Jews, and it's a weird time for you know, others in general. And obviously, we're not at a you know, in the social structure, Jews are a little more well integrated than other people that are minorities that are getting a, you know, we're not Mexicans, you know, right. We're not, you know, it's not like we're persecuted in the way where we can't stay in our country or anything, but there is sort of more anti-Semitism. And I have this weird ass impulse. I don't know if it's self-destructive or it's pride or it's fuck you, but like on my last special, I'm all about like, you know, I'm a fucking Jew and we're better than you. You know, like, you know, because I believe, I don't know what it is, but when I started, I just didn't know how to do the Jew thing without being like, oh, I'm a Jew, and you know, being a stereotype.
Right.
So it wasn't until it kind of evolved, I evolved into my own whatever kind of Jew I am, that I started talking about it more.
Yeah, I you kind of pushed me to do it a little more, and then I remember.
Did it feel good?
Yeah, it does. It just feels like it's who you are.
You own it a little
bit,
right?
I'm not religious, but but culturally, being a New York Jew is very much, you realize it's very much a part of who you are.
Right.
And I remember Gary Goldman once said to me, he saw me doing like, maybe it was a late night set where I did a Jew joke, and he was like, I like that you do that because not enough comics say they're a Jew on stage. Now I feel like everyone says they're a Jew on stage. But
it's time. But we got to stand up and be counted here. But no, I mean, it feels like, well, that's, I guess, what I was trying to say is like, you would think the impulse is just like, hey, just keep it cool. You know what I mean? You don't have to run around saying you're a Jew. You can make yourself a target. But then there's, if you're like really kind of like a, like an angry Jew, you're like, fuck that. I'm no fucking Jew. Go fuck yourself.
Yeah. And also it's like, I don't like that we have to be a stereotype. Like, I like that there's different types. I like that there's like a Lewis Black angry Jew and like an Elliot Gould cool Jew. And like, there's different types of Jews you could be. You know, it's not.
There are Jews that look completely, that are black almost.
Yeah.
There's a whole museum in Israel dedicated to you, to showing you that you don't, there is no stereotypical Jew.
Yeah, Amari Stoudemire.
Huh? Yeah, who's that?
I played for the Knicks, Jew.
Oh, yeah? Yeah. Well, you go to this thing and they just have this exhibit where they're just pictures, like, you know, pictures of like people almost look Latino and like all these different kinds of people. And it's like the idea is like all Jews.
Yeah.
So it's not just about you and your dumb middle class Eastern European Ashkenaz bullshit. You know, there's hundreds of different kinds of Jews.
Yeah. Yeah.
What happened with the family?
Well, you know, my mom, I don't ask too many questions, because I can, some of it, she was very supportive. So I didn't meet my biological father till I was 18 or 19. I was dating a girl who was a psych major and both her parents were shrinks.
Yeah.
And every time I'd have dinner with him, they just would analyze the shit out of me. It was
really
pretty brutal. Yeah. And I remember she would always accuse, like, anytime I'd get angry in a fight, and it wasn't even that angry, she would be like, who are you really yelling at? So.
Oh, really?
So.
How long did that relationship last?
Too long. But, but, you know, so I thought, you know what? Fuck it, I should probably just meet him just to get some closure, you know?
Well, let me get the picture. So you're growing up in Chelsea. Your mom, what kind
no,
of-
No, then Upper East Side.
Upper East Side.
Originally Chelsea.
Okay.
That's where I was born.
Oh, okay. So and your mom was a painter or what?
She's a painter.
Yeah?
She's really good. I'll show you her stuff after this.
Yeah, she like sell? Is she big? Gallery and everything?
Not anymore, but she was in galleries when she was younger. Marilyn Greenberg.
Abstract?
Yeah.
Nice. It's good Jewish stuff here. So you had like Danish modern furniture and like that whole kind of like- groovy artist kind of place or
not really.
Yeah, all right. But all right, so you're growing up and you know you got a dad that's, you got a stepdad, but you know this other guy's gone.
But he was such a good dad that I had no urge to meet. That's what's hard about talking this on stage is like I have a lot of jokes I love about it, but then people go like, oh, and I'm like, no, I had a great, I have to like address, no, I had a good,
I had
a great dad.
Right.
And I had a brother and sister who's a stepbrother and stepsister. But I just,
so he
my
had
brother
kids?
And sister. Yeah, he had kids from a previous marriage.
And you grew up with that guy since you were three?
Well, they met when I was three and they got married when I was seven.
So, like your whole life.
Yeah, so
you
I
didn't really
changed
know
my
the
name.
Other guy.
No, I never met him until I was older. So it's one of the, but then what's fucked up, I meet him, he looks exactly like me. And he's got, you know what's weird is he's got the same mannerisms as me.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I mean, what are you going to do? It's biological, like it's, some of it's wired in. You don't learn everything.
One of my first jokes ever was my friend said, is your biological father a good person? I said, if he were, I probably wouldn't refer to him as my biological father.
So, all right. So what brings it? Like, what do you know before you meet him? Like, what does your mother tell you about this situation?
She told me some stories that were not didn't make him sound great.
Was it in which area was it in? Philandering or abusive?
He wasn't abusive. I think he just kind of dipped. His previous wife had died of cancer, and he wasn't ready to have another family. He had a son already who lives out here. I haven't met.
That's your actual half brother.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
And then I met him at some restaurant in Midtown.
The half brother or the father?
Father, biological
so,
father.
So all you know is really is that, you know, he had a wife that had cancer, he's got another kid, and he just split.
And he left me a note in a safety deposit box, and I read it.
He did?
Yeah.
What, that your mother had the key to?
Yeah.
But she had not read it?
No.
When did you read it? How old were you?
Probably 19.
Wow, what was that? What was it?
He was like an ad man. It was pretty well written, but I don't know.
He was an ad man?
Yeah.
But like, what was it, an apology? Was it?
Yeah, he said I just couldn't do it. He kind of said, and you know, it was, I mean, it's weird because when you're 18, 19, you're a guy, I think you just have anger towards anything.
Sure.
So it's hard to trace what it was exactly to, but I felt meeting him would probably just be helpful for me. And my dad was so cool about it. He was kind of like so not threatened. He was like, yeah, I fucking killed it as a dad. I'm not, go meet him.
Well, yeah. Well, it seems like you're pretty well grounded and you had good love in the house.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely.
So like, you know, I guess the void, I guess, were you able to track the anger? I would assume like, you know, that most of that kind of anger would be like, did it have something to do with me?
I think it was like probably, I was getting fucked up all the time back then, just getting hammered. So I think a lot of it was just like, you don't want to think about some of this stuff. Mm. So you're just kind of bottling it up.
Yeah.
And I think it was probably a lot to take in because I think some of it probably made my mom upset to talk about. So I felt bad bringing it up.
Right.
But she, to her credit, would like talk about most of it.
Yeah.
But she told a story that I guess they ran into each other on the street when I was two or something. And maybe I was younger and I was in a carriage and she said, this is Sam, this is your son. And he just said, looks like you, and walked away.
Really?
Yeah. So there's an iciness there for sure.
Wow. So she got pregnant and he split?
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. So here's another weird one. So he lives now like 9 blocks from me just by chance.
Oh man.
So he's old. He's in his 80s now. And I saw him like a few months ago before all this. I saw him at the, maybe it was more than that.
Yeah.
Probably like 6 or 7 months ago. I saw him at the rec center because I go to exercise there.
Yeah.
Because they have a pool and stuff.
Yeah.
And he goes there for physical therapy. So I just ran into him.
Yeah.
There. And he, right. And it was just like one of those like, hey. And I was like, hey.
That was it?
I said hi. I don't know.
It's so weird. But what do you feel pain or weirdness?
No,
or?
I feel kind of closure. I mean, there's weirdness because I kind of, there's no playbook for this.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like there's no, I feel like I have my family and I've met his nephews are nice kids. His brother, like I know them. One of them's a really successful actor.
Your biological cousins?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Isn't that a weird term?
Yeah, it's kind of weird. Well, you got to put some distance on it.
Yeah, you know, I think you do.
You didn't have any relationship with him. One of them's an actor out here?
Yeah. No, he's fucking huge. He's the kid Ansel Elgort.
Oh, yeah.
He's in Baby Driver and stuff in those movies.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
And another one's named Warren, and there's a girl, Sophie, who I haven't met. And then I have my, but I'm like, it's hard. Like, how many people can you meet? Like, you know, like you got your circle.
I guess so.
I got a girlfriend. I got my mom, my dad, my brother, my sister. Like,
you got
I'm on the road all the time. How many people can I really?
No, I get that.
I got a niece and 2 nephews.
Right. From
my sister.
Oh, okay. Right. So, right. No, absolutely. But it really just becomes about puzzle pieces. Do you know what I mean? The meeting is like, what kind of relationship do you have? You don't have to have one. But like when I meet family, I didn't know, like if someone comes up to me, he's like, I'm Marin too. And I'm like, who now? How are you? Like they happened to me and I was playing the Paramount.
Yeah.
Out on the island.
Austin?
There. No, out on Long Island, Huntington. Huntington, right?
Right, yeah, I was there. Beautiful.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's great, yeah. But like, you know, one of the cousins, you know, who was like, it was like my grandfather on my father's side's, his father's brother.
Yeah.
So it would be my father's grandfather's brother's kid, that kind of shit. So it would be my grandfather's cousin. Shows up. And then you look at him like, I can see me in there. And then, like, but what else are you going to do? You're not going to keep in touch, but it is kind of bizarre.
It's kind of cool.
It is, right?
Yeah, I don't know. It's just hard to keep it on track. And like, you know, his wife too. I met him later in life, and I kind of dealt with it. I was in Tulane in New Orleans.
So you're 20.
Maybe 19.
When
still.
You met your father,
I think 19.
Oh yeah, we didn't even depict that. How did that? So
I met him at a cafe, and it was nice.
New York.
Yeah, it was like a nice little meeting where he kind of, we both were kind of laughing. We're like, holy shit! Like aside from my grandfather, I've never looked at a man that looks exactly like me. So it was kind of strange, you know.
So you laughed? Did you cry?
No,
crying.
No, but it was emotional. For
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, yeah,
and. Yeah, and I remember talking to a therapist in New Orleans about it.
When you were in college?
Yeah, and it was right
before or after?
After.
Okay.
And before.
Yeah.
And he was in, it was crazy. It was in the 9th ward, his hospital was, and it was right after Katrina, so it was abandoned. So it looked like I was seeing a shrink in like Shutter Island. It was crazy.
You just found a shrink down there?
No, my mom set it up. She said, I think you should talk to someone. So,
about this in particular?
Yeah, yeah. Huh. She was very supportive about it. And then he was funny because he was so smart and so kind, and he looked like Santa, but he could just turn into a dick like on a dime. At one point he said to me, he goes, you and mommy against the world. And I was like,
wow.
Dude, come on. This is like, it's like a, like roasty. I just want to talk.
Oh,
you know?
Wait, so does it surprise you? You got that in you, don't you?
Yeah, yeah. It made me laugh. But so I met him, and we kind of kept in touch, and I think she was just nervous for, you know, it's funny. It's like my mom handled it like a relationship I was in. She's like, I just don't want to see him get burned, you know?
Well, you.
Yeah, by him, because
right.
She was. She's protective.
Right.
You know, so yeah, there was that. And
but your expectations must have been minimal.
They were pretty
on
minimal.
On some level. I mean, you know, I mean, you were grown up enough not to have, you know, any kind of any emotional expectations. It was like sort of a curiosity thing, right? A closure thing, right?
Yeah.
It wasn't like you were expecting him to be your dad again.
I didn't know what I expected, though.
Oh, really?
No, I didn't expect to be my dad.
Right.
I had a dad.
Right.
But I mean, it was a weird thing. It's like the one thing that annoyed me about it on stage, like, because you get, you feel good when you can make a good joke out of it. It gives you something. It gives you something to relate to an audience
right,
with.
Right.
And it was hard to make jokes about it because, like, it just felt like a weird thing to get into. Like, well, I had this other dad. It felt,
yeah.
Especially now, it's easier. But when I was a younger comic, it was harder.
Also, because
you have a 15-minute set. Right. Now, when I'm doing an hour on the road, it's different. But when you're doing 15 minutes, you're like, so here's this dad.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
here's
yeah.
this dad.
Right.
They'd be like, get to it, get to the joke.
And also, you're kind of, you know, back when I knew you, or like, yeah, you still do it. I mean, you're a joke guy.
Yeah.
So, like, you're not going to do a long-form emotional piece.
I'll do like one story per hour. I'll do like one longer story per hour.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But
yeah.
But yeah, it was important to me to stay funny, you know?
Yeah, right.
It's like I'm a comedian. It's weird. Like we're in like the era of
that's
like,
the difference between me and you. Like
no, that's not what I'm saying. But there is like this kind of type of comedy now that is, it's fine. It's just a different type of stand-up
sure.
where it's, you know, more one-man showy. And I grew up, you know,
slugging.
I remember I listened to your albums a bunch.
Yeah.
Tickets Still Available.
Yeah,
and
yeah,
like
yeah.
And Attell's albums
yeah.
and Louis' albums and Chris Rock and stuff.
Right.
I loved hard jokes.
Punch. Yeah, yeah.
And all you guys had that.
Yeah.
So,
yeah, I think you're
that
right.
That was important to me to stay.
Yeah,
Attell always would always say like, whenever I'd say something to him, he'd always say, get funnier. And I was like, that's the most simple truth there is. That's all you need to know.
It's so, isn't it great to sort of, when that weird kind of one-sided relationship with Attell starts to happen, where he just like, he's comfortable enough just to say shit with you that just cuts right to the bone and then walks away. Why? And you're like, I don't know, man.
Yeah. I need it though, and it always comes from a good place, you know.
Oh no, so, yeah, he's a sweetheart.
So
right, yeah.
so
yeah, you meet
staying
the
funny,
old man.
Staying funny is important.
So you couldn't really address it on stage. Really.
It was hard. I'd have like simple jokes on it, like that one I told you.
Right,
it would be like pretty basic, and there's bigger stuff I thought would be at some point interesting to get into.
Well, you did, but like, what ultimately happened? You didn't. You know, you had the meeting with him. You saw the similarities, but you never felt like investigating anymore, like that the one meeting was enough.
No, I'd stay in touch for a while.
Oh, you did.
It stopped recently because it started to feel one-sided.
Oh, on your part?
No, on his part. I thought, like, he would, every note he would write me just would be like, and I'd be like, all right, this just feels like your thing now, you know? I remember showing it to a therapist I was seeing at the time.
Narcissistic guy?
Yeah. Like, I'm sure I got a little of it from him, you know?
Yeah, but like in the I, me part, like in the sense that he was sort of using you?
Or I wouldn't say using me, but I think, I don't know. I think maybe my expectations started to build once we started to stay in touch. And his wife, I think, has problems with him.
Oh, yeah?
I think it's tough for her. Yeah, she's a good person.
You met the wife?
Yeah.
He's difficult for her.
He's not a good husband or father.
So what you learned over time is that, and it kind of confirms it, is that he's kind of shitty. But, you know, you do see yourself in him, and hopefully not the shitty parts.
I'm working on it. You know, it's, what can you do but work on it?
But isn't that weird, though? Isn't that wild? Because you always wonder about that. Like, my brother's got kids, and they're all adopted, right?
Yeah.
So you really wonder, like, the challenge of that. Like, you know, how much of who we are is really just already in there?
Yeah.
And you see a lot.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
You're right. And I mean, it bummed me out that I think I'm pretty happy. I'm a pretty happy guy as far as it goes.
Yeah.
You know, we've all got our stuff and I'm irritable. So, yeah, you know, when you're on the road all the time, you sometimes take certain things for granted.
Sure.
But, there are bits that I always were like bummed didn't work because I think they made the audience too sad.
I got a few. Like, what's one?
Okay, one I always liked, and this never hit once, not once. But I said, so when you're legally adopted, what happens is your dad who wants to adopt you needs to get the biological father's signature.
Yeah.
So it's like the opposite of a UPS package. You know, he's like, here's my signature, and I don't want this.
Right.
Never hit once. I thought it was like a funny line, but it might be
too. There's a lot there.
There's a lot
to unpack for the simple package joke.
That's fair.
You know what I mean? I used to do a bit about my mother was anorexic, and I really think for the first 9 years of my life she just saw me as her fat. Like if she just ate less, maybe the needy kid would disappear. Like, and it's abstract, but like it kind of worked. But there's those kind of jokes. People are like, ha! Like it's not a real laugh. It's just like that's sad, and I'll acknowledge it with a noise.
Yeah, something. sometimes when they groan, though, I think it's because they care about you. I used to get really annoyed. And
was that a groaner that you did? Was the
they go?
Show?
Oh, they go. Oh, yeah. I think sometimes they're assholes, but then sometimes they're just like, oh, we feel bad for you.
No,
we like you, and we feel bad for you.
I know. That used to happen to me, and I would go like, don't do that. that was the whole title of that album I did in 2009. This has to be funny. It was because of that.
You had the joke, remember, about the guy who lives in your head?
Yeah. How'd that go?
It was about how you saw a guy just sitting in the front row of your show and he didn't smile once.
Right.
And then you went up to him like, what's your problem? And he said, no, I love the show. And he said, that means that guy lives in my head.
Right. That means the guy that's sitting there going, you suck, is in my head all the time. I just put him on other people.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, yeah. True, right?
I relate to that joke a lot, for sure.
I definitely
feel that.
That's an important thing to learn. Like, you know, these are people that come in from their life. You don't know what the fuck they're thinking about.
Exactly.
Yeah, and like
that guy might have gotten fired earlier in the day, and he just needed a break.
Right. Like I did a very Attell-ish kind of thing where I'm like, yeah, I can't project. I don't know what you really think. I'm just making you up. You could be sitting there going like, where did I bury the body properly? You know, like that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But it's freeing to have that to be comfortable with that. That the idea that like. They've all got their own shit. I've been to shows. I've been to movies. You know, there's going to be moments where people are just thinking about their own shit.
Yeah.
And yeah, that happens to me every time you look at somebody.
My girlfriend will say it to me all the time. She'll go, she'll just see me stare and she goes, where did you go? You know? And I was like, oh shit, people do that at shows sometimes. You can sit two jokes out and I got to just chill. We all got to learn that.
That's right. Like, you know, who was I talking to? Stuart Lee is a British comic and he actually quit. Because he, you know, it became too much for him, the anger of it.
Wow.
And then, like, I think, and I'm paraphrasing maybe the entire experience, but what he grew to realize was that, you know, there's just a misunderstanding. It's like, you made a bad choice for the evening. It's not my fault that I'm me. I'm going to be me, but we're not going to meet where we need to meet on this. And, you know, I'm sorry for that.
Yeah. Yeah. I also, though, when you're starting out, you're just playing shittier rooms.
Oh, yeah.
And I think it made me a worse comic for a couple of years because, you know, there's a difference between like
projecting, you mean, onto the audience?
Absolutely. But not just that. I think in club crowds, you expect a certain type of reaction as opposed to those kind of alti rooms where if they're just listening, that's almost enough.
I can't stand that shit.
I hate it.
Yeah.
I want to be a club guy, but then here's the problem with the club stuff. You're going to be punchier, yeah, but you're also going to turn on crowds so much more quickly because second a joke doesn't hit, you're like, where the fuck did you guys go?
Yeah. What's up? You know, like, yeah. Well, that's a good point, man, because you came up in sort of a different time than me. You know, by the time I was doing what became alternative comedy, I was just a bitter club guy. You know, I was doing whatever I was doing in New York, and then this venue opened where we could just improvise and just fuck off. So I looked at it as sort of a writing stage. Like, you know, all my shit happens on stage. So it was good for me every week to go to Lunar or whatever and just spew to see what happened, you know, to get new things, new ideas. But you actually came up in a time where there's a whole other business. Like, there were all these bringer shows. You had Brooklyn. You had all that shit. None of that was there.
It's so weird.
There was no Hannibal Buress's room in Brooklyn. You know, there was no, you know, Wyatt Cenac Knight or whoever out there. There was none of that. And, you know, I wonder how that kind of played out. Because what year did you start? Did you do comedy at Tulane?
I did. What's crazy is I kind of worked my way in at Tulane where I was only there for a year and a half. And then, so I, when I was there, I asked, like, is there any way I can do comedy here? And Katrina just hit there, like, fuck off, kid. Like, leave us alone, you know? But then they were bringing down this comic, Dat Fan. And I said, can I open for him? Can I just get on the show? And they were like, let's see. So I had a tape from a bringer show, and they looked at it, and they were like, oh, you can open for him. And it went so well. I mean, they were horrible jokes, but, you know.
Where did you do the bringer show, though? Like, where did you start?
In New York City. So I did, it was probably Comic Strip.
Comic Strip.
I did a D.F. Swiedler's class I took. Do you know D.F. Swiedler?
Of course.
He was great.
So that's what happened. So you graduate high school in New York.
Yeah.
And that summer you take a class?
I did, yeah.
With D.F. Swiedler at the
And Joe Mackey, who's still one of my best friends, it was in the class with me.
Oh, okay.
Just by chance. You would love Joe's comedy.
I'll check him out.
He's like my arch nemesis, but also my best friend.
That's
like
nice.
We fight like constantly, but he's
oh, that's nice.
He is like the best at topical jokes I've ever heard. It's insane.
Oh, check him out.
Yeah. So D.F., he taught the class, and I would come in like just too dirty every week, and he'd be like, just clean it up. And because he'd say, all your favorite comics who you think are dirty can write clean, too.
Who were you watching? Who were you guys at that time?
At that time, I mean, I remember Rock's album, Roll With The New, kind of blew me away.
Yeah.
Because it was just so, I remember I was listening to it once as a kid. I probably didn't even get all the jokes, but my mom saw me laughing, and she's like, what the hell is he listening to? So she grabbed the headphones and put it on, and I just saw her face, like she turned white. She could not believe, but then 30 seconds later, I watched her laugh, and I was like, oh, that's fucking powerful.
Right.
That he can say something off-putting and then rope her back in.
Right, that she was worried, concerned about you hearing this stuff, but she couldn't hide the laughter that came from the actual joke.
And I love that. So, you know, I love Dangerfield, because they were just classic jokes.
Yeah, I could see that.
I remember Lily Tomlin's special, Search for Signs of Intelligent Life.
Yeah.
That kind of blew me away. Yeah. It was just so cool and different.
Dangerfield doesn't get... It's weird about Dangerfield is that in death, he still doesn't get the respect he deserves.
Crazy. I made Taylor watch Back to School the other night.
Oh, really?
It's just pure... It's like pure escapist joy.
Kennison, the teacher who was in Vietnam. God. Yeah,
it's amazing.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so good.
Yeah, there's just how twitchy... Like, Dangerfield was the full operation, man. It was going all the time. Everything about him was funny.
I loved him. Yeah.
So those were your guys.
Yeah, and then, I mean... Shit. And then, like, then when I got a little older, probably like around 18, I was listening to like you and Louie and Attell and Giraldo and stuff.
Oh, yeah, Giraldo. I miss that guy, man. What a fucking. Yeah. Giraldo and Patrice. Out of all the fucking guys, I can't be here.
Two guys you want to hear
talk
about.
Yeah, right.
Those are like the only two guys I want to hear about talk about Trump left.
Right.
That's it. But
gone.
So many great comics. And
I took the class.
I took the class. Joe Mackey was, he was. Great.
Yeah. But he was just in the class with you.
But he was already funny. And then I went back to school and I was barking for a few years and stuff like that.
You went back to Tulane?
Yeah. And I was barking in summers and stuff. And
oh, down at Boston or whatever?
No, Boston wasn't there anymore, I don't think.
Oh, like maybe, Ha? Like, where were you barking?
Fuck, thank God I avoided Ha. I remember, like, that was... No, I did Underground Lounge, Broadway Comedy Clubs a little
Al
bit.
Al Martin's places? Was Broadway Al Martin? No.
Yeah, I only did that one for a summer, though. That's a rough room. I got spat on once there during a set, and I was like, I should like, just phone in here a little less. Like, a little... Yeah, handing out flyers was, for me, the best because, like, I remember comics would say, well, why don't you just do more open mics?
Yeah.
I was like, well, I get real people. You're still waiting to go on for 2 hours at the mic. And
yeah.
It's not like you're watching good comedy.
Right.
I may as well just be miserable here and then actually perform for 8 real people.
Right, right.
And hone some jokes.
Yeah. Oh, so, that's a good call.
And then I started doing all right, and I started doing well in festivals and, like, competitions, and that's what kind of made me a working act.
All right, so you opened for Dat Fan at college.
Oh, yeah.
You
so
do well.
I opened for Dat Fan. Then they said, you can, like, have a word in who we bring down. So then...
This is the student activities committee?
Yeah. They said, you can help us and just tell us who to bring down. So remember Ted Alexandro? I was like, you should book this guy. He's really funny.
Yeah.
So I opened for Ted. He was awesome. He couldn't have been nicer.
And did you know him from New York? You never met him
before.
I just
thought he was a good comic.
Oh, yeah.
And
he's
great. And then, yeah, I love his stuff. And then, so then... I kind of became friendly with him a little bit afterward.
Yeah.
Not like we talked, but like I knew Ted now.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah.
Bill Burr came down, and Bill was really, really cool too. And
before he was huge.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then like 10 years to the day, I think I was on Conan with him, which is so weird. He said, like, where do I know you from? And I was like, you don't remember.
Did he remember?
No. I think he just saw my face somewhere else or something. But
You were part of bringing him to Tulane.
Yeah, man. It was hilarious because it was like a 1,200 seater and like 100 kids showed up. They didn't realize how lucky they were to get a comic like Bill down there.
Oh, it'd be surprising he didn't remember that.
He did once I talked about it, but I don't think he really remembered. I think he was just being nice, you know? But
I can remember nights where, you know, you got the 1,200 seater and 100 show up. I mean,
and they were spaced out. It wasn't like a firm 100.
I did one of those in Iowa. Terror. I'll never forget it.
They're
it was
rough.
A fucking nightmare.
And he was so good, man. He was like, I remember a lot of the jokes still because it was such a funny set.
All right, so you leave Tulane to transfer to NYU. Why? Because you just want to be in New York?
I want to be in New York. I got a taste of the comedy scene.
You want to be close to it.
I would do one mic a week in New Orleans because that's all they had. So I was writing a lot, but I wasn't really getting on stage.
Right. So you went to, that's why you went back. And you went to NYU?
Yeah.
And what was the major?
It was like a made-up comedy major. I kind of just was like, let me just focus on comedy any way I can.
But you know? But you were able to graduate and shit?
Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
Yeah, so then there was that. And then I started doing like clubs more and more. But then what really like put it over, and it's so lame that this is what put it over, but like they do these competitions called March Madness in the city, like college basketball bracket style.
But who runs it?
Caroline's and Comics, which used to be in the city.
Comics, that room that overpaid and put you up nice hotels down in the meatpacking district?
I wouldn't know about that back then, but that sounds right, yeah.
But man, when they opened that place, right away, like I can't remember what year that was, but I remember I was flying in, so I must not have been living there. But they were like, you know, they were paying good and they would put you up right there at that Gansford Hotel. And I'm like, there's no way this is going to stay open.
Isn't that sad though?
How the fuck is this going to stay open? And the room was perfect.
It was beautiful. But isn't that sad that every time, same thing has happened with me where I'm like, anytime a gig treats me really well, I'm like, I give it 3 months.
Right. It's no way.
Brutal.
Well, it's just like, I don't even know why they were doing it though.
Yeah.
I mean, I know the rent must have been expensive, but you know, so why were they overdoing? Because they were trying to, you know, compete with Caroline's and whoever
Gotham.
To do that kind of room. And their way of doing it was just throw money at it, which wasn't the right way.
No.
But the food was pretty good.
I remember that tortellini.
Right?
But good food.
Nice room.
I miss it. But they did March Madness, and I did pretty well in those things because it was like, so you do 1 minute versus 1 minute in round one. So one comedian has to sit on the stage while the other one goes and then back and forth.
Oh, that's crazy.
Awful. I hated it, but it was like, how else am I going to get booked? I needed to get...
Do you remember who you were up against?
Yeah, of course. of course. I remember, like, the first year I did it, Joe List beat me, and Joe is, like, a freaking killer act.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Like, he was already... He's, like, already a pro in it.
Yeah,
I was like,
yeah.
God damn it, this guy's so good. Then the next year, I went... I lost... No, I won at Comics. I won the whole thing. It was me and Mike Lawrence in the finals. Every comic in it was killer. It was like Sheng Wang was in it. All these like killer acts.
Mike used to open for me. He's funny.
Mike's a great writer.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Dan Soder beat me at Caroline's in the finals.
Oh, yeah.
So it was crazy. You're just watching. So you have to sit there in the finals.
And it's all about a minute?
No, the first round's a minute. The second round's 2 minutes. The third round's four. And then it was like eight. And then it was like 15.
Really?
So then in the last round, I remember it was me versus Dan Soder. And you're just sitting behind him watching him work a room. And like, holy shit, I have like a whole new respect for all these guys. Because you like physically, you're almost in their body.
Right.
So yeah, it was cool. And so even though I didn't win that one, Caroline started working me and comics started working me. And
as a feature or opener?
Yeah. Then they'd book you a lot. So it was pretty cool. And then the other club started booking me, and I won this festival called Laughing Skull in Atlanta.
I know that place.
Yeah, it's a cool
Marshall's
club.
He runs a festival. I used to go down there to work shit out, like the little 80 seater.
It's great.
Good hamburgers at that place.
I mean, it's like you feel ill after. They're amazing, but you're like, this is crazy. I can't be eating this before I perform.
Not every night.
And we're like low energy guys. That's like, think about being like a Dane Cook or something.
Pull you right down. And they have tater tots there. I was so just good. Down there shooting a movie. I think I did one set there, but I did have the hamburger.
That's so good.
Yeah. So you won that one?
I won that, and that was like, the prize was like better than any other prize, because it was like, I think it was like 6 to 12 months of road work. So that's how I ended up working with you, I think. And a lot of the clubs headline me, lower rate headliners, and if they liked me, they'd have me back and pay me, you know, a regular pay. So so it was pretty cool. It just got me working. And then I remember I worked this club called Magoobies with Gary Goldman.
Yeah. And where the hell's Magoobies?
It's just a funny sentence. Where the hell's Magoobies? Timonium, Maryland. So I still play that club. It's a good club. But Gary, so this is a crazy weekend. I'm working with Gary, who I knew of Gary. I respected his comedy a lot. And I'm working with him. I'm featuring, and it just felt weird because the owner's dad had died. So it was a weird vibe in the club where he's a really nice guy, but there was a weird vibe. So I remember the late show one night, he gets on the mic and he just said, "All right, guys, quiet down." He's on the God mic in the back. Guys,
the owner.
Yeah, the crowd's loud and drunk. He's like, "Guys, you got to quiet down." Then he goes, "Guys, shut the fuck up. Shut your fucking mouth." He goes, "I'm sorry, my dad died. Come into the stage." Just starts the show in one motion. And it's one of those weird weekends. But then like, and I think it was like the first night Gary even said, like at the end of the night, he was like, "I really like your stuff and you're going to be the first comic I wreck at the Comedy Cellar." And I didn't think anything of it. I just kind of was like, well, that's nice. I don't believe any of that. If he wants to, that's
great.
Have
you been there?
No.
To the cellar?
No.
So you were just starting out, really?
No, I had been doing it for a while, but I just kind of had a reverence for the cellar and I just didn't want to go there.
Really?
Yeah, I thought it was like kind of like a special place.
Like it was Mount Olympus or something?
Yeah, a little bit. I just kind of thought it was like...
But you didn't want to do the, like, did you have too much pride to do the hangout thing?
Yeah.
Right.
It made me uncomfortable.
I did too.
I don't even, it was like pride. I think it was just like, I just thought I'd get uncomfortable. I want to be known as a dude like, "Oh, this guy's working here." I don't want to be known as, "Oh, it's that dude again."
Well, that's exactly it. Like I remember back when I started, you know, Lewis from Caroline's was the booker.
I know Lewis.
I know.
Yeah.
He was the guy that booked Catch a Rising Star.
Sure.
The original one. And, you know, the deal was like when I started, like I guess it was probably in the late 80s, or you'd go up there and you'd just hang around.
Yeah.
And I knew guys that would go up there and just sit there all fucking night waiting for that guy to go, "Yeah, yeah, okay, yeah, yeah, I'll get you on later." You know, like, and it was like...
That was a good impression.
Like, you know, and I was like, what the fuck? How is that guy's going to have power over my life? I just couldn't fucking...
It hurts. But that's why you got to spread it out. Like
I didn't go. I wouldn't do it.
But some of the best advice I got was from comics who were like hanging on by a thread, because they were the ones who just were, you know, maybe they weren't the best comics, but they were like, never get comfortable at one club, because they stop working you, you know, you're fucked. So
I just couldn't, like, I couldn't do any of it. And Esty did not book me until I had an HBO half hour. Like until I had an HBO half hour, then she decided. And I had, like, and I still have a weird fucking resentment towards the whole goddamn operation.
I get it, man. I get it. I mean, like, they've been so good to me. I've been fortunate there, but you know, I felt weird hanging out there. I hung at the Strip also, so I didn't want to be known as like a guy who hangs everywhere.
Yeah, I didn't do the Strip. I hardly ever did. The thing was, when I started, the original improv was barely hanging on, and Silver Friedman ran the place. And it was just beat up. No one went there anymore. And it was like, I could work there. Yeah. And I was like, this is history. I'm going to work here. And Boston. And that was that.
I missed that.
Because I knew Barry. And then, you know, the strip I could work at and stand up New York, like Kerry Hoffman once said to me, you know, comedy's not about what you do anymore. I'm like, what the fuck is that? You know, whatever.
I don't even know what that means.
Yeah, who does? But yeah, but like I should be more diplomatic. Noam and Esty have been very nice to me over the years.
I love them so
course,
much.
I knew the old man. You probably did. You knew the old man.
I didn't know Manny, no.
You didn't? Oh, really? So you really...
He passed before my time.
Wow. Yeah. Okay. Well, there was a lot of yelling, you know? And
sure.
Like I was, you know, I got into a fight with Manny and, you know, I couldn't, and he kicked me out. And I had to go, you know, it was one of those things where there had to be a brokered kind of like, I'm sorry, and whatever. So
it's like the mob. You have like a sit down.
You had a sit down.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I could do my two spots a week. but anyway, so Gary says he's going to wreck you.
And he did. And it went well. And so that was pretty big. You know, I couldn't ever ask someone to do that for me. So,
right.
So the fact that he did that for me was pretty big.
Oh, that's nice. So yeah. Forever. He's going to be the guy that did that.
I love Gary. He's still a close friend. And,
great guy.
And I love his comedy.
He's doing
too.
All right?
Yeah, I think so. Good. He texted me the other day. I'm going to call him this week.
All right. And so you work at the Cellar, and then like you're just out on the road headlining, huh?
Yeah, it kind of slowly happened a little more and more, you know? And then it just like feels like it takes forever to get that first thing, but then once you get that first thing,
what was the first thing?
Conan, probably. But then once I got it, it was like there was... It's almost like, fuck, all right, I got to keep writing to keep up
do those
spots.
5 minute sets. Figure out those 4.5 minute sets.
Stressful.
It's the worst.
And the first one, I didn't get the response I wanted. So that was really upsetting. You know? I did well, but I was like, fuck, the first one didn't get what I wanted it to. And that really hurt. Like, I was like, I know this. I know I'm not going to like this crowd.
Who
that
was
much.
Your producer? Was it Frank or was it JP?
JP.
But I like the joke still for as much as you can like
what
an older
What do you think
set.
Happened, though, when you like look at it?
I just think sometimes... It's a fucking 5 p.m. Burbank crowd. Like,
I guess
can,
that's
what
true.
What can you do? Like, it's not a crowd we're accustomed to, and I think the jokes were dark-ish, so I think...
It's weird like that. You know, that's an L.A. thing. Like, because, like, out here, you know, it's not a big deal to go to these fucking things.
Yeah.
You know, there's just... And if they have a problem getting people in the seats, they just pay... The audiences here is no good. You know, because, like, some of them do it... That's what their life is. They go sit in the audiences. Like... Yeah. When he used to do it, like in New York, it was a big deal. Like, they do Letterman in New York, it's a big deal. That audience is lit.
Yeah.
You know, they're like, let's go.
Yeah. Now there's so many late night shows and there's so many ways people consume stuff that it's harder. I think back when you're talking about like Letterman back in the day, like, yeah, you're right. That was a hot ticket.
Well, yeah. And it was like, that was what you were working towards. It took me forever to get on there. I didn't get on to Letterman fucking until I was, you know, well into it.
Wow.
But I ended up doing a few. But like there is a way of doing those 4.5 minute sets. And a lot of times it depends on who's producing for you. Like when I used to do Conan all the time, it was Frank Smiley, but I was a sit down guy.
Yeah.
But he would spend a fucking hour on the phone with me. Wow. Like going over shit. Like, and I tell him everything I got. It was good for me to do panel because I could go up with half-baked shit. Didn't need to be finished.
Yeah.
It could be funny enough, and it was going to be in conversation.
And you can riff if it doesn't hit. You
right.
can kind of riff on
right.
it. Right,
like dick around. Yeah.
You can't really be like, you can't say something after a joke doesn't get what you want.
No, not when it's a tight 4.5.
It's tough.
It's the fucking worst.
But I hated, I did Conan like a month ago, and I hated the crowd.
Yeah.
I hated them. They just weren't my crowd.
It's a terrible feeling. And I won't. Like I did Corden recently, and I'm not even doing stand up. I'm just sitting there, and I'm like, "Why am I doing this? Like, I don't even know what they're doing over here. They're doing tricks and just dancing. Like, what am I sitting here for?" Like, it was one of those moments where I'm like, "I don't have to do this shit anymore."
Yeah, it's kind of freeing when you realize that when it's sad because it doesn't like pop your career like it did back in the day.
Nothing does.
Yes, but then it's like it's fun to do still. It's still fun to do it.
But you know, it's great. Oddly, you know, the guys who are good at it, if we ever get back to normal. You know, you feel like you're in good hands.
I got buried by Cory Booker on Fallon. He fucking buried me. I can't follow Hope. It was like too upbeat. It was like...
What are you talking about?
He was like really...
And then they're like, all right, we're going to come back with Sam Morrell.
Yeah, and everyone's like, what the fuck is this guy? He's talking about getting arrested, you know?
But it didn't land?
It did all right. My family was there. I'm always in my head when my family comes. And then, of course, Cory Booker is just schmoozing. He was in the green room for like 30 minutes. I couldn't believe it.
Campaigning.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And my mom like loves him. So it was like, you know.
Oh, really?
Oh, yeah.
But you can't have your family go those until you're real solid, dude.
I know.
Like, I can't, like, for years, it was just like, what are you trying to do? You're just going to... You're just there. You the whatever you have in your head, that's you're just going to disappoint yourself.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and I'm also not fun to be with after those if they don't go how I want them to
go. Dude, the worst.
Yeah.
The fuck. After the Chevy Chase roast, I swear to God, I was in my hotel room with my friend Sam, like on the verge of tears.
But the way they cut it made you look really good.
Made you look great.
I remember one of your jokes, the one about how we're all nobodies. And you said, yeah, we're nobodies at the beginning of our career.
Right. Like they cut it great. They sweetened it. I should have learned. But like in the room, it was a fucking nightmare.
That's what I heard.
A nightmare.
Yeah.
And just the feeling of after doing that, you know, and then having fucking Freddie Roman say like, I don't know what these comics did, acknowledge their failure while they're doing it. Just do the job. And if it doesn't go well, that's just a bad night.
Wow.
Don't say you're bombing. He said that in The Observer. And I was like, fuck it. It just never stopped, you know, being terrible.
That is so funny because it's like, yeah, Freddie, you're like a legend, but it's a different type of comedy.
Yeah, man, no one fucking knows you.
I know.
Do you know, like, Freddie's a legend for being the guy who never got as big as his friends.
Right.
Listen to me, shitting on an old man. Like, yeah, I got to put my anger in the right place.
I bombed in front of him. I did a Friars Club roast when I was 21 of Omarosa. I couldn't have bombed harder. It was the worst. That was, like, the night I was like, maybe I can't do this.
That's the same with me.
It was Paul Mooney was Roastmaster, and the way he intro'd me, I still remember. I had nothing.
Oh, so he didn't. He set you up horribly.
Horribly.
No, he's.
But he set up everyone horribly.
Yeah, he's a monster.
And I look back, and so the Friars Club. So he intro'd me. This next comic is a fan of Bill Hicks, Rodney Dangerfield, George Carlin, Richard Pryor. I knew all of them, all dead. Sam Morrell, everybody. That's how he intro'd me. And it cuts to my face looking like, what the fuck, dude? And I bombed so hard. Maybe Carlin wasn't dead. Maybe it was someone else.
It was televised?
No, it was just for the internet.
Yeah.
But,
oh.
But it was the first thing that came up for me on every YouTube search.
Because it was your first gig that was available?
So clubs would be like, Sam Morrell tonight, and they'd post that, and it had more hits than anything I'd done. So I remember I went to them one day. I had a manager at the time who was like, bring him a bottle of wine. And I was like, to pull it down? She's like, yeah, bribe him with some wine. And I was like, it's like a rich organization. I found out later they weren't, that they were, you know, going under. But it was like a...
Did they pull it down?
It took forever. I was begging them for like months. They finally pulled it down.
Ugh.
I remember kids I went to high school with were like posting it on Facebook, like, look at this guy bombing. I'm like, come on, man.
Oh my God.
It hurt.
That's so weird that it happened. Like, because what I realized about me, though, just in general, is that I'm not a roast guy.
Yeah.
Like there's some.
You could be, though. I think you kind of, I mean.
I'm a little better, but like I have to know the person. I have to, you know what I mean? Feel comfortable because
I can.
That's
how it should be.
Right. But I always tend to go a little too, like I'm defensive. Like it's not my nature. I guess I bust balls a little bit, but only if I'm, you know, if it's okay. You know, but like the Chevy thing, it was not okay. He wasn't having fun. He didn't give a fuck. He was mad. And it was like, and I liked him when I was a kid.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I remember I wrote some of those jokes with my ex-wife and she never forgave me for not giving her a job as a writer when I could have. And, you know. Yeah.
That's tough.
Well, it's tough going out with a comic, dude. Good luck. You know.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, I'm not cut out. Like, I always felt like it. I mean, I could probably do it now. You're right.
Yeah.
But like it's I just remember that night just seeing everyone on that dais and just thinking I failed and that they were all looking at me like I failed, but no one gives a fuck.
There's a type of comic though who is like just made for that, and I know what you mean, like it's not our specialty, I don't think, but I think I could do it pretty well now too. I think I was too young and I didn't have any confidence behind the jokes. Like I remember when I auditioned to get it. And I killed in the audition room, so I was like, it was bad for me to kill that hard.
Well, it's just weird when you're standing there and they're right there. Like, there's Ross is great, Giraldo was great.
Oh, man.
There's a lot of people that
was
great.
Like, perfect.
And yeah, and now that, and he could go real dark and real deep and really get away with it. And now there's really anyone does them, and they just have a group of guys writing for it.
It's almost like you're casted more now.
Yeah.
But back then, Giraldo felt like so real with it, and Jeff is like, that's what he does.
Yeah, it's a style, you know. But I don't know, man.
Rich Voss had such a fucking funny burn on me after I bombed. Because he went on and he started bombing. And then he goes, you guys better laugh or I'm bringing Sam back up. And it killed.
Right.
And I fucking...
Was it the only thing that killed, though?
It wasn't a good crowd. He had a few.
They're never good crowd.
He's so good at that type of stuff, too, though, that like he kind of adapted. But like...
Yeah.
It wasn't a good show.
It's so funny that we both had those existential crises, but I was like older. I was already in it. I just wanted it to go well. I thought it like you assume this confidence when you do it. That's where you have to assume it. But yeah. if you don't really have it, that's where it's going to fuck you.
Yeah.
Especially in that situation. Because there's no recourse for it. You're just sort of like, I'm selling these shitty things about this person and they're not working. And now I'm just a fucking, you know, guy saying shitty things that, you know, people are like, not funny.
Yeah.
It's the worst. Like when you're just you doing your stand up, at least you can figure out a way out of it.
Yeah. Also, you're usually shitting on yourself in your stand up. Right. So it's like when you're shitting on someone else and it's failing, you're just a dick.
Yeah.
There's no. Yeah, there's no cushion there.
So, but ultimately, you ended up, the Tonight Show and all that stuff. But the specials, you got two of them now?
I did a half hour for Comedy Central, yeah. and I did an hour that Amy Schumer produced, and I wouldn't have gotten it without her, so I'm grateful to her for sure. And then, so I was opening for her a bit on the road. And yeah. Then
was that a good crowd? That must have been good for
unbelievable.
You.
Unbelievable. Arenas. Yeah. It was insane. It was, it's like, it was so cool to get an experience like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And
how's she doing? You talk to her?
Yeah. I play basketball with her husband a lot. Oh, okay. And then she's awesome. Yeah, good. I love her. I did a new one. I self-produced this one. And then I ended up, you know, the last one kind of hurt because it didn't make a big dent on the road. Because
it's hard, dude.
Because, you know, I really fought.
What's that one called?
It's called Positive Influence.
That was the first one. Was it an hour?
Yeah, it was the first hour one. Yeah. And then it's called Positive Influence. And it looks great. It's really well produced and uh-huh. stuff. But, you know, the way they put it on, they said it would be on Amazon and streaming, and it just kind of wasn't. It yeah. was, but it was, there's an ad every 3 minutes, so no one's going to actually sit through
so
it.
So this was the second one?
Yeah.
Oh, this is the one you just did.
No, the third one is the one I just did. That, I guess I count the half hour, but it's not really a special, I guess.
What's that one called?
That was just a half hour special.
But, oh, yeah, those are usually good. Yeah. Was, Comedy Central half hour?
Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah, and then you did the
Positive Influence with Amy, and then the new one I did is called I Got This.
And that was the one you self-produced.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because I'm so glad I put it out now with all this shit happening because I just needed it out. I needed it done. And
now people will fucking watch it.
I hope.
No, we'll get this up. Give it a good push.
I think, you know, I'm proud. That's my best special. I'm proud of that.
What's
one.
It called?
It's called I Got This.
Okay.
And it's just on YouTube. No ads. That was like really the only.
How do you make money with it?
You tell me. Touring, which I won't be doing now. But the Comedy Central paid me for it for the ownership. It wasn't a big.
Oh, so it's on Comedy Central's YouTube channel.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
That was the plan. And they.
You break even?
Oh, yeah. Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I broke even before I even made the deal with them. Because I charged the door and I made an audio deal. So I did already broke even there. So yeah, they were great because, you know, no one even gave me the time of day. I got a kind of a bite from HBO and then they kind of pulled back.
Yeah.
And then, you know, a lot of people won't even watch it. So I'm proud of it. It's almost 2 million hits already. You know, it's only been up a little over a month. So
that's great.
I'm proud of it. Comics shared the shit out of it, which is like all you can hope for. And it was like, it's a scary business sometimes, man. You know, like,
oh, yeah.
You never think, you're like, fuck, I'm going to have to do this myself. I'm the least organized human being on the planet.
Right.
And I really just asked someone, hey, would you ever shoot a special of mine? And of course, Liz at the Comedy Cellar, who's the best person ever, was like, yeah, let's do this at the Cellar.
That's great.
In the Village Underground.
Oh, you did it at the Underground? Oh, so it's a nice club set.
Yeah, it looks cool.
I got to watch it. Sorry I didn't watch it.
It's all
feel
right.
bad. I should have done my homework.
I should have watched yours already. I haven't watched your new one yet. I've been depressed to watch stand-up, to be honest, because I miss it so much.
Yeah, I don't. I'm pretty selective, but I try to watch everybody. I watched Taylor's before she came over.
Hers is great.
Yeah. Did you know her when she was putting that together? Were you guys together yet?
I met her like September-ish.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so I mean, I knew she was. We'd messaged a couple times just like, you know, I liked her comedy, so I was just encouraging. If I saw her do like a Fallon set, I'd be like, oh, this was really good.
Oh, yeah, wow. You know? So, and how are you guys holding up? Are you all right?
I think we're good. I think it's going well. I really
this
like
will be a
this
is a decider, dude.
I know.
And you can't go home because it's crazy there. It might have saved your fucking life coming out here.
It definitely saved my relationship because I was thinking about going back to New York. That's
what she said.
And I live in a studio. It's like, how depressing would that have been?
You could have gotten sick easier.
Yeah.
It seems it's all over the place.
I think she's happy I'm staying. I'm happy I'm staying. We're in that new couple phase now where we're watching so many movies. Like we're doing a movie podcast now.
Yeah.
Where like movies that are important to me versus that are important to her. So we're going back and forth. It's pretty fun.
So this whole theme of the beginning relationship thing, you can do It's got all these different subcategories.
Kind
there's
of, yeah.
The movie one.
I think we're just trying to
food one.
I think we're just trying to make shit. I think we're just like, let's not, let's, if every time we don't do stuff, we get more depressed. So yeah. Let's just try to, you know, I got like, I'm doing everything I can do to not, I bought kettlebells. I bought a mat. I'm like,
where'd you get those?
I just ordered them on Amazon.
Before they got stockpiled?
I guess. Yeah. I did. I was pretty good at the beginning. I'm like, I need everything here if I'm going to do stuff. So I'm like, I'll exercise. I got an Xbox. I got this. I'm like, let's just.
I've been running.
You've been running?
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah. I mean, I usually hike, but they close the trails.
I can't. I get
I don't
too
like
bored.
To run. I do,
get,
I hate it, but I need
do
to
do listen
the
to
cardio.
Music?
Yeah. Yeah.
Like pump up stuff?
Well, I'm like, yesterday I listened to Nine Inch Nails. So
that's
pretty
good.
That's pretty pump up.
Yeah.
But like, I've got the TXC thing, like one of those things on the door that you can, you know, do that business.
Yeah.
I haven't really locked into it yet.
Yeah.
Yeah. I just, I don't know, man.
I miss basketball so much.
Yeah,
not just playing, but I like playing it. So it's exercise that's fun. I just miss it.
I'm starting to feel that. Like, there's a part of this thing that I'm familiar with, like starting out as a comic. I did a lot of nothing.
Yeah.
So like, I'm not that freaked out about just hanging out and thinking. But now it's like, it's starting to kind of, you know, fuck with my head. I don't watch sports, but I imagine people who do sort of count on sports as part of their life, this has got to be a fucking nightmare. On some level.
I just miss basketball. That's the one I'm pretty obsessed with.
Yeah, yeah.
I just love the game so much.
And now you can't play it and you can't.
Can't do anything. But yeah, I think, you know, it really, it's an important time to like, I'll go to a negative place so easily, so I have to fight it all day.
Yeah, I think we're all learning a lot about ourselves during this time. Well, it's good talking to you, Sam.
This was great, man. Thanks for having me.
It was great, and I think we're going to put you and Taylor up on the same week.
Wow.
So wait, before you go, though, like, your folks are both still around?
They're both in New York City,
And they're okay?
I think they're doing pretty well. They're really, I mean, they're cautious New York Jews. They're staying indoors.
Are they happy with your career choice?
I think it took a minute. I think they were scared that I just was doing this so I could get drunk for free a lot. And then, you know, they saw me open for Jim Jefferies in Times Square at this massive venue once. And I think that was like the first night they're like, oh my God, he's opening for this big comic. And
right.
You know what? Also, they get really happy whenever I get a New York Times mention, even if it's not positive.
It's big to them. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Even if it's like Sam Morril was like off his game tonight, they're like, the Times. I'm like, yeah, that was bad. You know, but they, anytime it's, I think now they're happy.
Good. All right, buddy. Well, stay safe. It's good talking to you. I'll get out of your way as you move out of my garage, I think, and then I'll spray everything.
Cool, man.
That was Sam Morril, 6 feet apart. His Comedy Central stand-up special, I Got This, is available for free on standup.com/Sam Morril, or you can get it as an album wherever you get your albums. Here, I'll play some clean, wobbly, echoey Stratocaster for you. Boomer lives.